and welcome to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. I'm Charles Dagnall, based here in the UK in my little man cave, and our girl on the ground at the start of the T20 Women's World Cup is Lydia Greenway in your room, probably sheltering away from the heat of the day, and the first day is underway, but great to see you. How was your first day? Can I just say, before we start, I watched you on the television yesterday. Goodness gracious, there's some bold colours in those tops that you wear. That's not pink, it's pink.
I know.
They're really, really quite forceful.
They are, aren't they? I have to admit, you text me and you weren't the only person to text me about the colour of our blouses.
Who else texted you?
I had a message from one of our producers at Sky. He alluded to us maybe looking a little bit festive, a bit like a Christmas tree.
That might be Giles Woolley.
It might well have been.
That sounds like a very Giles Woolley type of comment, yes?
Yeah, and then just a couple of friends as well from back home. So it's not gone unnoticed, but I have actually gone out and got matching nails for it.
You have?
I have. Look at that.
They are very smart. Did you get them done there?
Well, I was hoping for more of an orangey colour, but it's actually quite red, isn't it? I don't know if you can see. You can on the YouTube channel, but not for the listeners. But it's been warm, which, you know, it was always to be expected. But I don't know about you, Daggers, but if I'm on holiday, I'm not the person in the sun. I'm the person under the brolly. So that makes it even tougher for us who fall into that category. But it's been a good first couple of days. And how are you? And I see you've taken a bit of inspiration from Prince William with your facial hair.
Very hairy at the moment, yes. And that is because I'm not working at this moment in time.
Why the
but
hell
theoretically,
not?
I should have had a shave for our podcast today. but I thought, you know what? Hell with it. I'm just going to go rugged, man. So, all is well here. I managed to plant my tulip bulbs yesterday. The first nice day we've had for quite some time. Whilst you've been sunning it up, or shading it up, I should say, we've had just torrential rain over here. And yesterday was the first nice day. So I went out and planted my tulip bulbs. Maybe a little early, but I had to get it done whilst the sun was out. And it's another pleasant day today. And today is Thursday, where there is currently... Now, what we're going to do, we're going to try and get as many pods out as we can. Obviously, Lydia is busy out there with both television and radio, but we will do our best to try and keep as much across things on the Daggers and Lids podcast during this Women's T20 World Cup as we can. You may see my eyes on the YouTube channel just dart to the left a little bit. That's because I actually have South Africa versus the West Indies on right now. So that is what is happening. This is, you can then mark the time that we are recording this with South Africa electing to bowl first, West Indies 102-46, and that is in the 18th over. So if you see my eyes dart to the left from time to time, my apologies. Nonkululeko Mlaba picking up 4 wickets for South Africa. And so let's sort of head back a little bit to the first game, the one that I was really looking forward to, which was Scotland versus Bangladesh, because even though it was the opener, this is in the Sharjah Stadium, probably the oldest of the cricket grounds in the United Arab Emirates. I'm sure someone will correct me if it's not. But first off, afternoon game, two sides within that group, within Group B, which probably felt that their best chance of a win was in that particular match. It just so happened to be the opener, a low-scoring affair, which I fear is going to be the sort of the way across the board during this Women's T20 World Cup.
Yeah.
Bangladesh batting first, 119 for 7. In response, Scotland 103 for 7. Performances, Shobhan Mustari, 36 from 38 with the bat for Bangladesh. 3 for 13 for Saskia Hawley with the ball, the off-break bowler. Scotland in response, that 103 for 7, just not enough. Sarah Bryce was 49 not out off 52 deliveries. 2 for 15 for Ritu Mony. So, first impressions of that game, Lydia Greenway. You were there, you were commentating on it. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with the low scores already. And I think just to give a bit of an overview of the ground at Sharjah, it's the smaller ground of the two. So Dubai Stadium is bigger. I think Sharjah, it was built back in the 1980s. It's been there for a long, long time. It hasn't actually hosted that much international women's cricket. I think the first game it hosted was back in 2019 when the UAE played against Namibia. But in terms of the conditions, the surface, it looked okay. It had a bit of a grass covering on. Looked okay, but it very quickly got a little bit lower and a little bit slower. There wasn't much turn on offer throughout the day because it was a double header day yesterday. The only time that there was some turn was at the back end of the second game. But either way, spin was the dominant force in both games. And I think that was the standout point for me in that first game yesterday between Scotland and Bangladesh, is it was the side who played the spin the best, ultimately. And I think noticeable, one interesting thing for me with Scotland, in the warm-up, they were out a good hour and a quarter, an hour and a half before the start of the game. And I was looking out the window and I just thought, I'm all for keenness, I'm all for showing that you're there and you're up for your first game. But I just felt that for people like us in England and in Scotland, you want to minimise that as much as possible. And whether that played a part in the result, I doubt it. But I just think that that's something that they can consider a little bit, because the heat yesterday in that first game was absolutely unbearable.
What were we talking, 37, 38 degrees?
Yeah, so it was highs of 38 yesterday, but it's also the humidity as well. Yeah. That's the thing that gets you. But yeah, I mean, the game yesterday, Scotland, at one point, they were in a really good position. Sarah Bryce was going really nicely, as you would expect. They will need her to step up along with Catherine Bryce. But then she did get some good support from Ailsa Lister, who, when you look at the scorecard, she only got 11 from 12. But the way that they were playing, it was they were in control of the run chase. And I just thought, if they can just keep doing that, then absolutely no problems. But then, unfortunately, Lister fell, and then the people coming in just couldn't quite get going. Priyanaz Chatterjee, 5 from 6. Darcy Carter, a young player, she was in the under-19 Scotland squad. She just couldn't find a way to rotate the strike, just a nice big stride down the ground, knock it out to mid-on, mid-off. She's a tall girl. So I think it was a little bit of inexperience, Daggers. I don't know how much you were able to see.
Yeah, I was able to watch pretty much the response. I mean, I planted 120 tulip bulbs in record time, let me tell you, so I could get back and watch the response. Yeah. But I saw the highlights of the first innings from Bangladesh. One noticeable thing was the boundary count. It seemed, even though it's the smaller of the grounds, the outfield was pretty slow.
So
there's going to be a lot of running and a very few boundaries, which again happened in the second game as well as the first.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about Darcy Carter in that she is a tall girl. She holed out, didn't she, down the ground, trying to launch it. And the timing wasn't quite there. And it's almost like the heat and the humidity and the conditions. When you field it for 20 overs and then you've got to go and bat, sometimes it can create a little bit of muddled thinking.
Yeah.
I think from a Scotland perspective, everything that is successful at this moment in time, and I hate to say it, anything good that happens has got to come via a Bryce, whether it be Catherine or whether it be Sarah. And I think you've got to box clever a little bit. And I think all sides have to a certain degree. Now, I looked at Sarah Bryce at the end of that game. She had nothing left. Absolutely nothing left. She'd kept for 20 overs. She'd batted for 20 overs as well. And I reckon she'd lost probably about 2 stone after. There wasn't a lot to lose anyway.
Yeah.
Only a slender thing, but my God, the amount of water that must have sort of come out of her body, just given her role on that day. It was obvious there was a lack of power for Scotland. It was also obvious that in adapting to conditions, working the gaps and working the spaces is something that if you bowl slow and you bowl straight, it seems, in the UAE, it's very, very difficult to get away. Now, I'm not a fan of this. I like to see the seam bowlers involved. And I like to see a sort of nice balance within a game of cricket. But also, you have to have different conditions. A T20 World Cup in South Africa is going to be different to the UAE, which is going to be different to Australia, say, or whatever it is. So I also understand that. Everything has its place. But what I was going to ask you was, being a really good player of spin and having faced attacks like this in the past, in T20 cricket, technically, what can players do if they don't have a power of a Deandra Dotton, a Stefani Taylor, or a Wolfhard A, whoever it may be? And I say those names just because I'm looking at them now, but or Heather Knott, or whoever it is, if you're a Bangladesh, a Scotland, a Pakistan, which we'll come on to in a minute, how are you trying to accumulate a score or even chase down one given those conditions?
Yeah, it's tough. And I think I look at it from a coaching point of view a little bit more now. And I think one thing that I sometimes speak to with younger players more so who are trying to learn how to play spin is that it's on a spectrum. So at one end of the spectrum, I call it like a gladiator warrior. So you have the Deandra Dottins who just want to come out and they want to whack every ball. And then at the other end, you have the silent assassin who, you know, the gladiator warrior might get 8 or 10 and over. And that might be a couple of boundaries, a couple of dots, and then a couple of singles. Whereas the silent assassin might get actually one boundary and over, but the rest are ones and twos because they're just manipulating the field. So I think that can change, though, depending on conditions and the situation. You're not either one or the other. But I think more specifically in this situation, I think for teams like Scotland, Bangladesh, Pakistan, who don't have the power, I think it's about being really purposeful in hitting your sweepers hard. So I remember when we were trying to learn how to rotate the strike a bit more with England, and we were very much dink and run, dink and run. The only thing you're going to get from that is a single, or it's going to be a dot. So actually what you want to be doing is hitting the cover sweeper hard, hitting the long on, long off sweepers hard. And that is from Darcy Carter's point of view yesterday, she was caught on the crease. And actually, I would have liked to have seen her coming at the ball, using her tallness, her reach to just pump the ball down the ground. The pockets, we talk about the pockets a lot, try and get either side of the fielders out in the deep, and just good stable bases. I think when you've got too much of a narrow base, you can't hit those sweepers hard. But it's so much easier said than done.
Yeah, I mean, you want to go down the ground. You want to try and put bowlers off a little bit, so that they're trying something rather than settling into, right, I'm going to stick this on middle and off stump. It's not going to turn a great deal, and you've got to generate the power. What about also lateral movement at the crease? I saw that a couple of times, and it worked quite nicely, where actually batters were going right across to off stump and hitting behind and power hitting hard. Now, okay, there is an element of risk if you don't connect with the ball and you're trapped right in front, but also working that deep backward square area or just in front and generating pace that well. The flip side of that, if you do get across to off stump and then sort of hard sweep, then getting up and trying to power to is a little bit more of a difficult aspect, but it's just another option to potentially put the bowler on the back foot a little bit.
Yeah, because I think as much as we say at a ground like Sharjah, you have to play straight, you can also play properly laterally as well. I think where you get in trouble is when you're playing with 45 degree back, when you're trying to turn the blade and work it into an angle that maybe isn't there. But yeah, I'm completely with you. Moving over onto your off stump, it creates different angles, so you can beat backward of square by hitting the ball even further behind square. So yeah, absolutely, Daggers. And I think there will probably be the conversations that teams like Scotland and Bangladesh are having, I would imagine, after having that first game under their belt. But yeah, absolutely, power or lack of power was a noticeable thing. It'll be interesting, actually, when we see teams like Australia, New Zealand, India, to see what their boundary count would be like. My suspicion is it will be higher because...
Yeah.
They're not massive boundaries, it has to be said. Saw Nida Dar got a couple away yesterday for Pakistan. So it's absolutely clearable. I think it's just, have you got the technique and the power to do it?
What I'm interested in fact, the West Indies have just finished their innings. Again, it's that same type of total, like 118 for six, very similar to what we saw in the Sharjah games. This is at the Dubai International Stadium. But it was just on the point you had made about the boundary count. I'm just going to do some live maths here. 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 fours in that total. That's out of 120 deliveries bowled. So it just shows you what you need to accumulate outside. And I think it wasn't too dissimilar in the other one. Maybe a couple fewer in the Bangladesh, Scotland and Pakistan innings. We got a quite grumpy comment on one of our YouTube sections about, you only spent 25 seconds on Scotland in the last time. Well, our apologies for that. There was a lot to get through. And, of course, the main focus will be those who are going to be sort of hunting down the trophies and stuff like that. It's not that we don't care about Scotland. We do. We want to see them progress. It is a progression. They'll learn a lot from being out here in the T20 World Cup and seeing what they're playing against the top nations and the standards and where areas they need to work. From Scotland's perspective, again, I go back to the Bryces. It's very easy to do that, and it sounds like a cop-out, but trust me, it's not. They are their best players at this moment in time. Do you foresee a possible occasion where if Scotland win the toss, is their best chance trying to stick a total on a board and then defending, perhaps get a couple of early ones and maybe instill a little bit of panic into the opposition?
Yeah, I think that's the way to go for all teams, because people talk about the dew here in the UAE, but there's been no dew. I've spoken to a lot of the England girls, they've been out here for a while. They've been training out here also in Abu Dhabi, and they just said it's not coming down. I think because we're probably earlier in the time to when they normally have their cricket here. So the dew hasn't come down. So I think bat first, get the best of the wicket, because it is going to only go one way, which is slower and lower.
Yeah.
And because you're not going to get the benefit of chasing under lights with the dew where it skids on more. That's just not a thing at the moment. Whether it changes in a couple of weeks' time, I don't know. Mm. But yeah, I think not just Scotland, I think all teams should look to try and set that total.
Another question for you. Is the best conditioned team out there gonna make a huge difference? The fittest?
Yeah, I think so, because actually the fielding yesterday, it normally we are keen to big up the fielding element of it, but there were a number of drop catches yesterday from all teams. Bangladesh dropped 4, Scotland dropped 3, Sri Lanka dropped 3, Pakistan dropped 3. So I think when you're seeing themes like that, it's not just a bit of bad luck, actually. It's probably a bit of fatigue. It's then your techniques go. So, yeah, absolutely. I think fitness will play a part. And to be fair to Scotland and Bangladesh, they didn't look unconditioned. But I think it was more how it affects your brain. You've probably been there more as a bowler when it's been a hot day and you're trying to hold your shape in your bowling action. It's tough.
Totally. It is. And also, you can try and create as much as you can in practice. Nothing recreates the focus and the mental fatigue of a game an actual game situation. You know that better than anyone. I know it too, is that yeah. you can practice and practice and practice and put yourself in as many or feel as ready as you possibly can given the conditions, but nothing can replicate an actual game situation because A, you don't know how it's going to go. There is more intensity, there's more pressure, and in so doing, more going on in, upstairs as well. And whilst you're thinking about one thing and you're dealing with the heat and you're dealing with the situation, things can go awry. So I'm confident, and having just seen South Africa there, that the fielding will hopefully improve. Just finally on that, before we quickly talk about Pakistan, Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Do you feel that given the nature of these surfaces, and many of them will have to be reused as well during the course of this tournament, that doesn't usually lend itself to higher scores?
No.
Do you think that will be a trend throughout the tournament, that actually scores will sort of remain in and around this kind of area?
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because we haven't seen Australia play yet, or England, or India. So I think when we're looking at the best of women's international cricket who set the benchmarks, my hope would be that if either one of those teams bats first, today, obviously, India and New Zealand are playing, tomorrow, England are playing as well, and Australia, then I think we will get more of a gauge of where the tournament should be. I think, you know, we saw some games yesterday where, you know, the sides have not got anywhere near as much resource, support or experience as the top four. So I don't think we can be too harsh on Scotland, Bangladesh, Pakistan or Sri Lanka. But I think we will see a better reflection of where the women's international game is at once we see those teams in action. Hopefully that's fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on that, the second match, the evening match, you did two games yesterday, though, working you
hard. No.
Pakistan took on Sri Lanka. Pakistan made 116 all out. Three wickets for Chamari Attapattu, 3 for 18. 3 for Kumari, 3 for Prabhadani, who still does bowl seam ball. She is a seamer, but she bowls at sort of 59-60 miles an hour. I thought she bowled really well, especially in the death. But a little sort of cameo from Fatima Sana, 30 from 20 deliveries, 3 fours, 1 6, because Pakistan were going nowhere fast. They were 88 for 4, that in the 15th over. And then Fatima Sana just sort of took the ball by the horns and clonked a few to the boundary. And that sort of injected something, got them to 116. As for Sri Lanka's response, I don't know about you, I was really disappointed. Yes, there was Tamari Attapattu early. She just made 6. But Vishmi Gunaratne, 34 balls for a 20. Nilakshika Silva, 22 from 25. But all the rest of the batters, all in single figures, churning out deliveries. They only made 85 for 9 in their 20 overs. And Saida Iqbal, 3 for 17. Fatima Sana, 2 for 10. 2 wickets as well for Amaima and Nashra. I was really disappointed with Sri Lanka. They sort of didn't have any options whatsoever. No power hitters, but no real sort of nous about the run chase. Given what we've seen, and you know, they have had a decent 12 to 18 months in T20 cricket. I was left a little bit wanting.
Yeah, I'm with you, Doug. I look back on it now, it's actually quite funny. At the build up of the show, I was on as the Sri Lankan expert, so I was talking about them. And honestly, if you had heard me, Daggers, I thought they were going to win. Like, it could have been that I was that much. I was that much behind how well I thought they were going to do in the game. That's how hard I was going, because they've had such a good 18 months or so. They've played the most cricket out of everyone since the last World Cup. They played 31 games, they've won 22 of them. That included series wins against England and South Africa. They also won the Asia Cup for the first time. And I just felt that they were really settled coming into this World Cup. So to be in a position where they were chasing 116, they will look back and they will think, right, we need to have played conditions better. I spoke to Shamari Atapattu. She mentioned the pitch and the conditions were really, really hard. She did say that. But what was really nice in the post-match interviews was the first thing she said after I asked her a question was, congratulations to Fatima Sana and the Pakistan team. And I just thought that sort of sums her up as a leader, really. But from a cricket point of view, they will have to turn things around very, very quickly. You can't let the spinners settle in this competition. There's no doubt about that. And I think if you do, which Sri Lanka did, then you're always going to be losing wickets. So, yeah, they just couldn't get any sort of momentum. But a great win for Pakistan. That's the positive, isn't it? A really good win for Pakistan. And first win, first World Cup win for Fatima Sana as well. As captain. Well, and
just to go back to Bangladesh, Jyoti, the wicketkeeper captain, who was just on her knees and had been through 10 years. I think, was it 10 years? Between the last Bangladesh victory and this one in T20 World Cups. But they've been through the ringer a little bit, how Bangladesh a horrible losing streak. And so you could see the emotion pour out of them. And that's what you want to see. That is the kind of reaction. And we all understand that there are boards that have money and there are boards that don't have money.
Yeah.
And we totally understand that no doubt that there is a disparity in the game, which we hope one way or another, we'll try and get equaled before too long. Just watching the first over of South Africa's response against the West Indies. They're 9 without loss, and they keep bowling half volleys to Tamsin Brits and Laura Wolfhauer. Just throwing it out there, they can play full deliveries right outside the off stump. Just a tack, just a little bit of hope from me there, to the West Indies bowlers. Okay, so they're the first two games. I'm going to stay with Pakistan. Because worryingly, by the way, the games that are coming up, as I mentioned, South Africa, West Indies, as we speak at this moment in time, is being played out. Zayda James is having a bowl, and we saw her in the under-19 World Cup not too long ago over in South Africa. Nice to see her progression to the international stakes, although she's on her knees at this moment in time, looking like she's injured. So I think she's caught one in the chops. So anyway. I think she's okay, though. Meanwhile, I digress. There are games going on. So India take on New Zealand this evening. England and Australia in action on Saturday. As mentioned, we will try and bring you as many podcasts as we can. There is a time difference. And Lydia also has to work her proper job. So we have to take all of those things into consideration before we actually get podcasts sorted. But we will do our best. Right. A worrying news report came out just on the eve of the Women's World T20, and it says that Pakistan's women players are still awaiting 4 months of salary. Now, the players who are currently on a 23-month contract with the board starting August the 1st, 2023, have not been paid since June 2024. The contracts that were supposed to run till June the 30th, 2025, were to be assessed at the end of the 12-month period. That is still due and no changes have been announced as yet. This is what the PCB had to say in a statement. And this is coming from CricBuzz, by the way. CricBuzz.com is where the report was. It is a work in progress, said the PCB. As soon as the lists are finalised and approved, contracts will be offered with effect from the 1st of July, 2024. A PCB official explained to CricBuzz that the reason for the delay is that there is too much going on and there is a lack of time to address all matters. Now, as statements go, that sucks ass. I'm sorry, and I've said it, but it does. Get the players paid. That is number one. Pakistan's women players, and I'm reading down the report, the pay disparity is alarming. In Pakistan, the women's players, Bangladesh women's players get paid more. Pakistan is the fourth richest board in the world, apparently, according to CricBuzz. Okay? And the women's players have not got paid yet. They're expected to increase their spending on women's cricket by $600,000 this year. Not reviewed the details as yet. But among full member nations, the PCB also has among the widest gulf in match fees for men and women's cricketers. Now, read the room, Pakistan. I'm yeah. sorry, but okay, if you could, if it is a work in progress to try and get pay equality, fine. But my because everyone else seems to be going that way. England have done that. Australia have done that. South Africa have done that. New Zealand. If that's match wrong, fees. I think match fees wise, yeah. I think that's the balls that have done it. But don't give it. There's lots going on, and we've not got round to it. I mean, that's just. I mean, the odds are horrific. Get them paid. They're playing in a World Cup for your money. Astonishing, Lydia.
Oh, daggers. It grinds my gears so much, honestly. And we are still in, unfortunately, a bit of a situation where generations of female cricketers and probably female sportswomen have been brought up in a society where you're made to feel grateful for whatever you get. So you never ask for more, you never challenge things. And if things like this happen, unfortunately, they're not always challenged or questioned. So I would love to see a time where actually, as females, we feel a lot more confident about saying this is not good enough. But on the flip side of that, there has to be bigger change from the other side for people who are within power to actually understand that what they're doing isn't good enough. And it really isn't. You know, we're freelancers, daggers, and one of our bugbears is we put an invoice in for work we did however long ago. Some people pay you on time, some people don't. And if you're a regular employee, that would never happen. You get your salary and that's it month by month. And that is the situation for Pakistan women. They should be getting their salary because they are working, they are busting a gut for their country. And to say there's other things going on is not good enough. All that says is that women's cricket in Pakistan is not a priority. And it absolutely isn't good enough at all. Is it the FICA, the Federation of International, something like that? Yeah. Who should, I think, come in and help
there is
with
no
that?
There's no organised players' union for the women cricketers in Pakistan. Again, something that needs to change. Who is going to go up there and fight for their rights and to turn around to the board and turn around and say, you know, they're not going to do it. Frightened to death to do it, and I don't blame them as well to your employer. We do it. You say about us being freelancers, we don't want to turn around and say, can you pay us, because we want to be used again. We don't want to upset anybody because, you know, then they say, oh, well, you know, we're not going to use them again because they keep asking for money. Even though we've worked for it and earned it, you get into that mentality. So I can totally understand where the Pakistan players are coming from. But I did read something else on this. I can't find it for the moment. It does say the salaries have been delayed for the Pakistan's men's team as well for the last 4 months. However, it's understood that the reasons for the delay of the salaries of the men's team and the women's team are different. That is what CricBuzz say. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
My point is that if they are different, I can understand possibly what is going on and why they are different. Not good enough for any cricketer, any sports, man or woman, to be not getting paid what they are duly owed or what is in their contract. Yeah. So I think that's worrying, and it's gone a little bit under the radar. I hope that gets rectified very soon. Don't get me started on the Afghanistan women's cricket team. Right. We will deal with that another day, and hopefully in the company of Mel Jones as well. Last bit, a good news thing. It's just a domestic thing, but whilst we're here, we might as well do it, is that Durham have made their eighth signing, and it's a doozy. Lauren Filer has made the decision to go and play for Durham next year in next year's tiered status county championship or county system in the Metrobank and also the Vitality Blast. She signed a 3-year contract. It's England's and possibly the world's fastest bowler. And Durham want to make waves. They want to make splashes. And that is exactly what they have done. To add on to Holly Armitage, to Maddie Villiers, now they've got Lauren Filer, and I think they've sort of really have said, you know what, we're going to go out there and upset a few. We're going to make a proper statement in the women's game. And I like what Marcus North and Danny Hazel are doing.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? They're building a side which, even with the players that they've got, I know it's not a full squad, but they've got a really good skeleton of a side. They've got the fast bowling department. They've got that all spinning all rounder in Maddie Villiers. And then they've obviously got Holly Armitage. I guess the three big names who have been announced within that. But it's fantastic. And I think it just shows that counties who don't always get the opportunity, when they are given the opportunity, because they haven't hosted a huge amount of international cricket, when they are given the opportunity, they grab it with both hands. Mm. And it just shows the intent that they've got to support the women's game moving forward. I would imagine it would be the same as counties like Essex. You would hope that they actually really push things hard. But to have Lauren Filer, and just a little one on the side, her batting has actually come on quite a bit. She's not a bad striker of the ball, especially in T20 cricket. So, yeah, fantastic signing for Durham.
Someone made the comment to me on social media that, or how much are they going to have her, given that you're playing for England? And it's a pertinent point. It's absolutely 100%. Yes. But I also think there is an element of, you know, you can sell Lauren Filer. Do you know what I mean? To garner interest in the women's game up in the northeast and things like that. Have big name signing. You've got the fastest bowler in the world. I would argue she is right now. I'm sure Taylor Vlamic and Darcy Brown and stuff may have an issue with that, and outside of Shabnam Ishmael as well. But she'll be in your top five. Of that, I have absolutely no doubt. And I think if you make this kind of splash and you have these kind of players, that sort of generate more interest within your local area and the county club itself. I think that's fantastic. So well done, Durham. Look forward to many more signings being announced in due course, and especially from down there in Hampshire and also at Essex and Somerset too. Yeah. So looking forward to more of those being announced. Right then. We're pretty much done. South Africa are going great guns. 26 without loss after 3 in pursuit of 119, I think it was, to win. When are you next on our television screens?
I will be tomorrow. Obviously, England have got their first game, which I'll be doing. And again, it's a doubleheader as well. So England have got Bangladesh in the evening game. And then Australia will be taking on Sri Lanka in that first afternoon game. So tomorrow I will be there. So we'll have to organize another pod after that, see how England go.
We will indeed. It might be a case of, because you are so busy, that I might have to do the thing and get up early, and we'll bash out an early podcast because of the time difference. I don't mind. I will do that for the Daggers and Lids podcast.
That's how committed you are.
Yes. Well, absolutely. But we've got a lot to talk about. So we will try and keep them as regular as we possibly can. Obviously, so much depends on Lids' availability. And we do understand, obviously, that how busy you are as well. So it's been great fun. You look after yourself. Stay out of the sunshine.
I will.
And have a nice day off before tomorrow. We look forward to listening to you. And for all of our listeners on the Daggers and Lids podcast, don't forget, you can follow us at Charles Dagnall and at Lydia Greenway on X or Twitter. You can follow me at Charles Dagnall on Instagram. And make sure you are on our YouTube channel at Daggers and Lids. It's very easy, Lids with a Y. And there's loads of preview. There's lots of great interviews there that you can catch up on. It'd be great if you hit that subscribe button and like us and all of that sort of stuff. So we look forward to your company next time.